This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The whereabouts of Osama bin Laden may be a seven-year-old question, but it still echoes through the halls of the Pentagon, and it still drives U.S. foreign policy, at least in part. Al-Qaeda lost its bases in Afghanistan when U.S.-led forces toppled the Taliban, and many senior commanders have been captured or killed. But both the Taliban and Al-Qaeda have new bases just across the border in Pakistan. According to reports, U.S. special forces crossed that border yesterday to raid several houses in a Pakistani village. While the U.S. has made no official comment, the use of U.S. ground troops and reports of civilian deaths caused an uproar in politically precarious Pakistan just a couple of days before its presidential election. With the 7th anniversary of September the 11th a week away, are we any closer to finding Osama bin Laden, containing Al-Qaeda, and stabilizing Afghanistan? Later in the program, we continue our series of conversations on This American Moment. This week from the Republican National Convention, we'll talk with John Fund of the Wall Street Journal about what's online in this election. If you'd like to weigh in by email now, the address is talk@npr.org. But first, 7 years on, are Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda still your number one priority? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Pakistani journalist and author Ahmed Rashid. His most recent book is Descent into Chaos, and he joins us now on the phone from Lahore in Pakistan, and it's good to speak with you again.
Thank you.
And let's start with this raid into Pakistan yesterday. What's been the response there in Islamabad and in Lahore?
Well, it's been very fierce, both by the civilian government and by the army. The foreign minister has spoken out very strongly in parliament. They've called the U.S. ambassador in for dressing down. The army has given a very strong statement saying there's the possibility of retaliation, although what that exactly means, we don't know. And the army is insisting that there was no pre-warning by the United States, that there was no intelligence sharing that usually has happened in the past, and it was all over so quickly that, in fact, the army did scramble its troops to try and resist this, but they didn't reach the place in time, and the American soldiers were able to get away in their helicopters.
What?
More than that, tonight there are unconfirmed reports that there's been another missile strike from the Afghan side, presumably by U.S. forces, against another Al-Qaeda house or some kind of target in the tribal areas. That happened tonight.
And what effect might it have on the election just a couple of days away?
Well, it's obviously, you know, drawing a lot of attention away from the elections. A lot of people are speculating that, as you know, there was a very big military offensive in Bajor, one of the tribal agencies along the border with Afghanistan, which went on for about 3 weeks. And then very suddenly, the army announced a ceasefire, saying that the militants had all been wiped out, and there was now a ceasefire for Ramadan. Now, what people are suspecting is that this ceasefire is something that, first of all, probably angered the Americans and NATO forces in Afghanistan very much, because just about 10 days ago, Pakistan's army chief met with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Arun Mullin, on a battleship in the Gulf, where he got a lot of praise from the Americans. So this ceasefire, I think, has come as a bit of a shock to the Americans. But the other part of it is there's speculation that this ceasefire might just be for the duration of the presidential elections, and because there was a problem of getting members of parliament to come to parliament from the tribal areas, because the Taliban had been threatening to kill them. So the ceasefire was put in place so that these elections go off peacefully, and then the army would resume its offensive. Now, that still has to be seen, but I think one reason for this very severe reaction by the Pakistan government has been possibly that the Pakistanis may have told the Americans that, look, this ceasefire is only in place for a few days, just for these elections. Don't get worked up. We'll resume the offensive after the elections. I think that could be a reason why the Pakistan army and government have reacted so aggressively against the American action.
There have been, as you noted, many missile strikes across the border by American forces in the past several years. What's different this time is the use of ground forces, or at least the admitted use of ground forces.
Exactly. I mean, we are told that, in fact, ground forces have intervened before, U.S. special forces, but it's been done very secretly, and it's probably been done with permission of the Pakistani authorities, and they have not wanted to publicize it because it would create such a furor. In this instance, certainly, this is the first publicly intrusion, publicly propagated intrusion. And it involved U.S. Forces arriving in helicopters, landing, shooting up some houses in which the Pakistanis say civilians were killed, and then the American forces quickly leaving the area.
Do we know what the target was, what the intelligence was? Presumably, it would have to be a very big opportunity to take such a risk.
Well, the Pakistani version is that there were a group of Taliban who were fighting with Afghan army troops on the Afghan side of the border. They came under pressure, and then they retreated back into Pakistan, and that this was a part of the chase. The Americans were chasing the Taliban across the border. But we've had no such statement from the Americans or from NATO exactly explaining whether this was a targeted attack against some kind of Taliban, Al-Qaeda hideout in the border area, or whether this was in fact a hot pursuit incident in which U.S. forces were chasing the Taliban back across the border.
Well, as we continue this conversation, we'd like to know if Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda are still your number one priority as we approach another anniversary of 9/11. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Peter Bergen is here with us in Studio 3A. He's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, has written extensively about Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Oh, Peter, always good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Neil.
The White House, the Pentagon, the CIA. None of them deny that this operation happened. None of them confirm it, actually, either. What are you hearing? And does this represent a departure in policy?
Well, I mean, certainly the New York Times has the story down, and CNN has also got the story down, admittedly on background. So, I mean, I don't doubt that it happened. Of course, this is very sensitive in Pakistan, as Ahmed Rashid has said. When you poll on the question, is it okay for American forces to go into Pakistan in pursuit of either the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, 75% of Pakistanis say, you know, absolutely under no circumstances should American boots be on the ground. So the issue of Pakistani sovereignty is a sensitive one. This is something of a new development, although in the past there have obviously been U.S. Special Forces and U.S. CIA officers on the ground in the Northwest Frontier Province, but not in this public manner, dropping in helicopters.
And does the fact that the Pakistanis at least say this time, in the past, they have protested these missile strikes, for example, but it's always been when President Musharraf was there with a wink and a nod, everybody sort of understood we have to protest this publicly, but privately we knew it was going to happen.
You know, I think on the missile strikes, there's obviously going to be protests if civilians are killed. If you look at, we've definitely seen the missile strikes, if there's a tempo is going up. But if you look at the strikes that have actually killed members of Al-Qaeda and without, you know, civilian casualties, the Pakistani government doesn't protest those, seems to live with it. So it's a question, if the intelligence is good and the outcome is actually accurate, that's something the Pakistani government can live with. It cannot live with the civilian casualties, and it can't live with very obvious American soldiers on the ground inside Pakistan.
And is this seen as a departure, Ahmed Rashid, in Pakistan?
Yes, very much so. We really don't know, I mean, the truth, you know, because, as you said, I mean, a lot of these earlier missile strikes that have been taking place for several years have been carried out with a wink and a nod from the Pakistani authorities. There's equal speculation that this intrusion could also be a wink and a nod, and that publicly, of course, Pakistan has had to protest it. But I think the level of protest, which has been so strong, and especially the foreign minister addressing Parliament, where there was a motion against the American intrusion, and both the civilians and the army seem very united in the strength of their condemnation of this attack, I think really the Pakistanis were not aware of this beforehand and that there was not any kind of intelligence sharing.
It's getting awfully late in the evening there in Pakistan. We're going to let you go in just a couple of minutes, Ahmed Rashid. But I did want to ask you, in this country, there seems to be no doubt that Osama bin Laden is somewhere in the Pakistani border area with Afghanistan, that al-Qaeda and the Taliban have set up bases, training areas, operational headquarters, that the war in Afghanistan is, in fact, being conducted from Pakistan. Does anybody in Pakistan not believe that?
Well, I think there are still a large number of people who don't believe it or don't want to believe it. But I think that what Pakistan is right now preoccupied with is the Taliban advances made inside Pakistan, that is, by the Pakistani Taliban, and the kind of attacks they're launching. They have refused to accept a ceasefire in the tribal agencies, which the army has ordered a few days ago for Ramadan. There's still very heavy fighting in the Swat Valley, which is adjacent to the tribal areas. So, and there's a fear during Ramadan of suicide bombings in the cities of Pakistan. And, of course, we've just had the assassination attempt against the prime minister just 24 hours ago. So, I mean, there is real fear here about the advances being made by the Pakistani Taliban. And for Pakistanis, I think that is the major issue, rather than Afghan Taliban using Pakistan as a base to attack inside Afghanistan.
Which might be why the United States is putting its emphasis on that.
Well, I mean, you know, exactly. But I mean, I think, you know, the U.S. is equally concerned about the advances made by the Pakistani Taliban in Pakistan, because obviously this is increasing the territory under their control. It's increasing the ability of al-Qaeda to operate freely in so-called Taliban-controlled territory. It will allow more foreigners to come in and to receive training. There are already very strong reports, both from the Americans and NATO and from the Pakistani military, that a lot of Arabs have come in over the last few months from Iraq. The word in Iraq is that al-Qaeda has lost the battle in Iraq. And
Ahmed Rashid, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time. We'll let you get to bed.
Thank you.
Ahmed Rashid, his latest book, Descent into Chaos. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's not yet clear who the U.S. military targeted yesterday in its reported raid across the border into Pakistan, but the area, a mountainous region controlled by local tribes along the Afghan border, is considered one of the likely hiding spots for Osama bin Laden and other top leaders of al-Qaeda. Today we're talking about the hunt for bin Laden 7 years after 9/11. Are Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda still the number one priority for you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Peter Bergen is with us, a journalist, senior fellow at the New America Foundation. His most recent book, The Osama Bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader. And Peter, a lot of people say Osama bin Laden isn't relevant anymore, just an icon.
Well, I think that's a stretch. I think he still provides broad strategic control to not only al-Qaeda, but also people operating in the name of al-Qaeda. So, for instance, he's called for attacks in Pakistan the last year. One of the reasons we're seeing all these attacks in Pakistan is because of that call.
So the influx also of Arabs, as Ahmed Rashid described them, into the tribal areas of Pakistan over the past several months, that's an indication, too, that these training areas are open for business.
It's also an indication, though, Neil, of al-Qaeda in Iraq suffering really quite a major defeat, because of its own actions in Iraq, alienating the Sunni population. And I've talked to European counterterrorism officials who say that the numbers of Europeans going to Iraq, which would have been, you know, dozens here and there in 2006, has dropped to zero now. And those people are now going to Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Let's see if we can get a caller in on this conversation. Mike is with us. Mike calling from Mystic in Connecticut.
Hello. It's good to talk to you guys. My major concern about Osama bin Laden is not that he's out there. It's that we've been going after him for so long, and we need to really, if we're entering into a new administration, whether it's going to be a McCain administration or an Obama administration, it really doesn't matter. We need to have open dialogue and open diplomacy with these Mideast countries, because Obama really is an icon, in my opinion, and we need to keep our nation safe, but we don't need to be blazing, be seen as blazing guns all over the place.
Senator Obama has talked openly about if he saw targets of opportunity in Pakistan, he would not hesitate to attack al-Qaeda targets there.
I don't know if that's the same, though. Attacking open al-Qaeda targets in Pakistan isn't the same as having an aura about you that means you're just going to go off, you know, bombing and shooting everything in sight. And taking over nations.
Peter Bergen?
Well, both Senator Obama and Senator McCain actually seem to have a very similar view about Afghanistan, for instance. They both called for two or three brigades more, i.e. Up to 10,000 more American boots on the ground. Whatever their aura is, the fact is that the policies on this issue are not dissimilar. Of course, there is a problem. If you keep a lot of American boots on the ground in Iraq, you can't magically produce them in Afghanistan. But with that caveat, both candidates understand that the situation in Afghanistan and Pakistan has really got significantly worse in the last year or so, and that there needs to be a rethink about everything we're doing there.
Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Peter, as the focus returns to Afghanistan, how much worse is the situation? We keep hearing these reports of large-scale Taliban attacks on American bases. This would have been unheard of a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're referring to an attack that happened back when I was in Afghanistan in July, where Taliban overran an American base, killed 9 American soldiers in a sort of direct attack. That's unusual. But more broadly, you know, violence has gone up 40% in the last several months in the east of Afghanistan. We've seen 10 French soldiers were killed in just 30 miles outside of Kabul in the last few weeks. And the Taliban are trying to encircle Kabul and cut it off. Now, they're never going to be able to do that. But they are certainly operating pretty close to the capital in a way that would not have been true even a year ago.
Let's get Maxine on the line. Maxine with us from Philadelphia.
Hi there.
Hi.
I would just like to say that bin Laden definitely should be a priority of every American, considering, you know, that we were attacked by bin Laden on our soil. And if anyone's thinking that in the last 7 years, they're just sitting back on their laurels thinking that they did a great job and not planning further attacks, really, you know, isn't in reality what's happening. And as a side note, my brother is in the military. He's in Afghanistan currently. And a lot of military families whose children signed up to fight for America, you know, that mission shouldn't be forgotten.
We wish your brother the best of luck. It's a difficult job. Peter Bergen, though, a lot of people would say that, there's been no attack on American soil since 9/11. There's been no attack in Europe since the London bombings, that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda don't represent the same kind of threat they did 7 years ago.
Well, I think that's true. I don't think they represent the same kind of threat, obviously, that they did on September 11th. I mean, the American public is more vigilant. The American Muslim community has rejected the al-Qaeda ideas. Al-Qaeda doesn't appear to have sleeper cells here, and it's very hard to get terrorists in the country. So if you can't get people in and you don't have people in the country, it's very hard to carry out attacks. However, that being said, if you remember the planes plot of the summer of 2006, Neil, in London, the plan to bring down 7 American, Canadian, and British airliners with liquid explosives. If that had succeeded, that would have been 1,500 Americans, Canadians, and Brits dead, and we'd be having quite a different conversation in terms of is al-Qaeda a threat or not, since that was an al-Qaeda-directed plot. They are weaker than they've been in the past. They are regaining strength on the Afghan-Pakistan border. You can't count them out. Their threat, I think, directly to the United States is relatively low, but their ability, for instance, to do a mass casualty attack on Americans outside the United States remains pretty high.
Maxine, thanks very much. And again, we wish your brother the best of luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get Andrew on the line. Andrew's calling us. I don't know where Andrew's calling us from.
Hi, Neil. I'm calling from North Carolina. I'm stationed at Fort Bragg and splitting my time between Fort Bragg and Fort Benning. I am an Army officer. I've served both in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I've got to come down fairly hard on the line that the disruption of al-Qaeda is still a significant priority to American security. While I would disagree with your previous caller that the kill or capture of Osama bin Laden isn't necessarily as high of a priority, it would do significant things for American conscience, American ego, American mental health, perhaps. But as far as the disruption of Al-Qaeda, the cellular nature of such an organization, the decapitation really doesn't disrupt that cell to any great extent. Now, as far as Mr. Bergen was saying, I do agree that Al-Qaeda's ability to target Americans here in America has been degraded. However, we have seen that in Afghanistan and other places that their ability to attack has actually increased. Several years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, you would see at most about 10 to 15 man-sized elements of Al-Qaeda and Taliban incursions into Afghanistan. And then about the time that I was in Afghanistan in 2006 and 2007, we saw that those size of those forces jump up to about 200 people. So their ability to reorganize, and they're using these Pakistanian provinces and states to reorganize and really strengthen their numbers so that they can come in force across the border and attack Americans and Afghanis and other NATO allies there.
Andrew, let me ask you, the men that you command, if you're a lieutenant, you're with a platoon, I assume, and that's a fairly small unit, and you get to know them pretty well. Those guys, are they still as motivated to go after Osama as they were when you were there last time, do you think?
Well, Neil, I'm not so certain about that. I'm actually a captain now. I've moved on out of the platoon leader stage. But while I was there, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, I was a platoon leader. And while we were there, we started to feel the dragging down. And I think that we talk about information operations being a significant portion of the military psyche. So I think that a victory with regards to Osama bin Laden and the ability to capture him would actually boost the military's psyche and their morale in terms of going after some of these other harder missions, including a lot of the humanitarian side of things that we don't hear a whole lot about, of building bridges and wells and clinics that we are doing in Afghanistan.
And those
types of things really start to wear on the military in terms of not being feeling a little bit restricted, not being able to pursue the enemy as much because you're diverting your attention to a lot of this nation building, for lack of any better term.
So that's seen as a diversion from the what really ought to be the mission.
To a lot of soldiers, it is. As you start, I think the senior military commanders and then down into a lot of these special forces, they start to realize that that is significantly more important, in that as you build these relations, you decrease the likelihood of extremists and Taliban forces attacking.
Andrew, thanks very much. Andrew calling us from Fort Bragg, which is the home of the U.S. Special Forces, and we appreciate the phone call, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay. And one of the things he was talking about, is Osama bin Laden at this point just a symbolic leader? We hear so much about the leaderless jihad that these self-starting cells are off doing their own thing.
Well, leaderless entities don't usually aren't successful in doing complex operations. I mean, 9/11 required a structure or organization. If it's really just a leaderless jihad, the problem is over. Because, you know, by their very nature, leaderless groups don't achieve much. I mean, they don't have the infrastructure, the organization, the training, the planning. If the U.S. Army was not led, it would not be effective. So same is true with any kind of insurgent or terrorist organizations. And I think Al-Qaeda, the central organization, is still there on the Afghan-Pakistan border. Bin Laden is still giving strategic guidance. When Al-Qaeda gets involved in an operation, as in the London attacks of July 7th, 2005, which was the biggest terrorist attack in British history, you know, the leaderless jihad becomes effective when they hook up with Al-Qaeda Central and get training. That's what happened in London. That's what happened with the planes plot, which didn't succeed in the summer of 2006 in London. And that, unfortunately, going forward is the kind of model that we'll see is leaderless jihadis, quote-unquote, hooking up with Al-Qaeda Central, getting training, getting bomb-making skills and then conducting a successful operation.
And nevertheless, if that's continuing those kinds of operations, somebody's got to be paying for it. Somebody's got to be funding this. It can be done on a shoestring, but nevertheless, even shoestrings cost money.
Well, these are very cheap shoestrings. I mean, look at the London attack of July 7, 2005. It was financed by credit cards, cost a few thousand pounds, you know, just a few thousand dollars. The people, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, was self-financing. Most of the suicide attackers who came bought their own money, gave it to the organization, the foreign fighters. So these operations don't require a great deal of money. Running an insurgency, however, does require money. That's why the Taliban is doing well in Afghanistan, in part because it's getting money from the drug trade.
We're talking with Peter Bergen about the hunt for Osama bin Laden and the hunt for Al-Qaeda almost 7 years after 9/11. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Joe on the line. Joe with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Yes, I was wondering about the recruitment. I remember a couple of years back we were reading a lot of Al Jazeera and how they were showing a lot of the supposed atrocities that we were committing on the people in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm wondering if what kind of attempt we have been making to try to calm that down and if we've had any kind of success in doing that. I know the madrasas have been a breeding ground of a lot of that. And a lot of the countries are going to try to get some of that under control, and I'm just curious if any of that had ever been done.
Well, you know, I mean, the United States, the First Amendment, I think it's very difficult for the United States to get involved in telling people what to think and how, even if we disagree with their ideas. I mean, our whole culture is based on the idea that we don't do that. So as a general proposition, I'm opposed to the idea of the United States going around telling people what to think or what to watch or what not to watch.
I guess my question is, we just don't hear about it much here in the United States anymore as far as the recruitment. And, you know, they just said millions of the young people in the Islamic world were rallying to Al-Qaeda and anti-American causes. And we just don't hear about it here in the States anymore. At least I don't hear in Louisville. So I'm just curious if that's still the case, if there's still that many people. And also when you said that there's no sleeper cells here in America, you know, our southern border is so wide open, I can't imagine that some of the people, Al-Qaeda people, aren't coming across that border and just waiting for a chance.
Well, I can't prove negatives to you, but if Al-Qaeda's sleeper cells exist, they're so asleep, they're comatose or dead. They've done nothing. And in the absence of evidence, I don't think they exist.
On Joe's other point, though, public opinion polls in the Arab world show that Al-Qaeda and its ideology are increasingly less popular.
Indeed, Neil. I mean, and that's human nature, because when the bombs go off in another country, you don't care about it. But when they start going off on your own doorstep, it took 9/11 for the United States to wake up to this problem. So when the bombs started going off in Iraq, Al-Qaeda lost popularity. When the beheadings, the suicide attacks, etc., the bombs started going off in Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia started losing popularity. Support for suicide bombing in Pakistan has dropped from 33% 5 years ago to 8% now. So, you know, that is a reality, and that's in the long term. This is very damaging to Al-Qaeda's ability to continue to recruit. But, you know, the caveat there is small groups of people can influence history. I mean, look at the Brigati Rossi or the Baader-Meinhof gang in the 70s in Italy and Germany. These were very small terrorist groups with zero popular support, yet they inflicted a great deal of damage on Germany and Italy. So even as Al-Qaeda's popularity wanes, that doesn't mean they're out of business.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And the other thing is, what about the targets of Al-Qaeda? As we've looked at their inability to mount successful attacks in Western Europe and the United States, we have seen, though, continued attacks in other places. Obviously, Iraq has been, from their point of view, a disappointment, but there have been others as well.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, the Iraq playbook was imported to Afghanistan. You go back to 2003, there were one or two suicide attacks in Afghanistan. Last year, there were 140. So the tactics and ideology that Al-Qaeda was involved in Iraq have migrated to Afghanistan. We're also seeing in Pakistan, there were 60 suicide attacks there last year, which is more suicide attacks in 1 year than they've had in their entire history. So while they may not be able to attack in Western Europe or the United States, although it's easier for them to attack in Western Europe, the United States is a harder target. But, you know, clearly mounting a suicide operation in Pakistan is very easy for these groups. We've seen them happen every week.
And what about targets in the Arab world? There was a great threat in Saudi Arabia, for example.
Well, and that is reduced a little bit in Saudi Arabia, but you may recall the attacks in Egypt on the Taba Hilton, which killed a number of people, the attacks in the Sinai and the Red Sea resorts. We've seen an attack in Jordan that killed 60 at an American-owned hotels in 2005. So they continue to have an ability to do these kinds of attacks in the Middle East.
Peter Bergen is with us. He's from the New America Foundation, and his most recent book, The Osama Bin Laden, I know. About 7 years after 9/11, we're talking about whether al-Qaeda remains our number one priority. Is it your number one priority? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are some of the headlines we're following here today at NPR News. Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick pleaded guilty today to felony charges in connection with a sex scandal. As part of his plea agreement, Kilpatrick will spend 4 months in jail and be fined $1 million. Kilpatrick must announce his resignation immediately, and it will become effective in 2 weeks. And Senator John McCain accepts the Republican presidential nomination tonight in St. Paul, Minnesota. Workers are rebuilding the stage to make it more friendly to McCain's town hall approach. Tom Ridge and Lindsey Graham are also scheduled to address the convention. You can listen to live coverage tonight on many of these NPR stations or listen online at npr.org. And details on those stories and, of course, much more coming up later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. He'll look at how the major presidential candidates feel about biomedical issues, including embryonic stem cell research and funding for basic research, plus a look at the status of voting machines around the country. That's all tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. In just a moment, we'll continue our series of conversations on This American Moment with Wall Street Journal columnist John Fund. But Peter Bergen is still with us. And Peter, when we ask people if al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden are still their number one priority, opinion polls suggest that's no longer the case.
Yeah, obviously the economy plays much more loudly in people's fears and hopes than al-Qaeda does. And, you know, I think that's just human nature. The threat is now 7 years behind us, it seems. Al-Qaeda doesn't seem to have an ability to attack us, at least for the medium short term. And I just, you know, that's just human nature. That doesn't mean that al-Qaeda suddenly has decided to go out of business just because Americans no longer consider the group a threat.
As you look at American foreign policy, the resources devoted to this, a lot of, well, certainly Barack Obama has said that the war in Afghanistan has been slighted by the diversion, as he calls it, by the war in Iraq. Nevertheless, as you suggest, both presidential candidates seem to now suggest that we need to focus a great deal more on Afghanistan.
Yes, and I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, what looked like a model victory may become a model defeat if we don't get our act together in Afghanistan. And we know from Iraq that if the right group of people start rethinking the policies, that you can have a favorable impact. Now, of course, Petraeus is going from Iraq to run CENTCOM, which includes Afghanistan and Pakistan as part of his area of responsibility. You've got a new Pakistani government. You're going to have a new American government. I think the time has come right to really look at a strategic reset in Afghanistan and, of course, in Pakistan. It's all part of the same problem, in a sense.
Peter Bergen, as always, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Peter Bergen of the New America Foundation joined us here in Studio A. In just a moment, This American Moment.